Lucifer's catwalk, my shoulders and arms screaming in agony from the strain.
"Now, damn it!" he roared. "Jump!"
I let go. For a dizzying instant, it felt as if I hung in midair, not moving at all. By the time I realized I was falling, I thudded down onto the curving hull of Lucifer's envelope with a bang that knocked the breath out of my lungs. I had missed the catwalk and the men waiting to help me by several meters. I felt myself sliding along the curve of the shell, my arms and legs scrabbling to find a grip, a handhold, anything to stop me from sliding off into the oblivion below. Nothing. The shell's skin was smooth as polished marble. In my earphones I heard a sort of howling noise, a strangled wail that yowled in my ears like some primitive animal's shriek. It went on and on without let-up. I couldn't hear anything else, nothing except that agonized howl. If Lucifer had been as small as Hesperus, I would have slid off the shell and plunged into the thick, hot clouds kilometers beneath me. I sometimes wonder if I would have been roasted to death as I fell deeper into the blistering hot atmosphere, or crushed like an eggshell by the tremendous pressure. Instead, Fuchs's crewmen saved me. One of them jumped off the catwalk and slid on the rump of his suit to my side and grabbed me firmly. Even through the yowling noise in my earphones, I could hear him grunt painfully when his tether stopped us both. Then he looped the extra tether he carried with him around my shoulders. I was shaking so hard inside my suit that it took me 3 tries before I could control my legs well enough to follow Fuchs's crewman back up to the catwalk, where his companion already had his arms wrapped around Marguerite. I found out later that she had dropped neatly onto the catwalk and not even lost her balance. I was on my hands and knees, gasping from the efforts of the last few minutes. My shoulders felt as if someone had ripped my arms out of them. I was beyond pain. I was numb, wooden. The catwalk seemed to shift beneath me, tossing me onto my side. I looked up and saw Hesperus breaking apart, big chunks of the envelope tearing away, the gondola splitting along its length. Marguerite screamed. I saw the line of tethers flapping wildly, empty. Raising myself painfully to my knees, I looked for Rodriguez. He was nowhere in sight. "Where's Rodriguez?" I demanded. No one answered. I looked directly at Marguerite, who had disengaged herself from the crewman who'd held her. "Where's Tom?" I screamed. I couldn't see her face inside the helmet, but sensed her shaking her head.
"He jumped after me."
"What happened to him?" I climbed to my feet shakily. Fuchs's voice answered in my earphones.
"The third person in your party jumped too late. I had to jink the ship sideways to avoid the debris falling from Hesperus. He missed us and fell into the clouds."
Lars Fuchs. That was the long, terrified scream I heard in my earphones. Rodriguez falling, falling all that long way down to his death. I stayed there on my knees until two of the crewmen yanked me up roughly by the armpits of my suit. I could hardly breathe. Every muscle and tendon in my body was in agony. And Rodriguez was dead. Marguerite said softly,
"My mother."
She sounded exhausted, as drained physically and emotionally as I felt. I looked up. Hesperus was gone. No sign of the ship. Nothing above us but swirling, sickly yellow-gray clouds. Nothing below us but more of the same. Duchamp, Rodriguez, Waller, and the 3 technicians. All dead. Venus had killed them. But then I realized that was not true. It was my fault. I had brought them to this hellish world. I had made them intrude into this place where humans were never meant to be. I had killed them. And myself as well, I thought. Without my medication, I'd be dead soon enough. Tethered together like mountain climbers, we slowly, painfully climbed down the ladder rungs set into the curving hull of Lucifer's gas envelope to an airlock hatch set into its side. My heart lurched in my chest. I saw dark streaks smearing the length of the envelope, just as they had stained Hesperus's shell. The bugs were chewing on Lucifer's hull, too. It was only a matter of time before this ship would break up just as Hesperus did. We were all going to die. There was no way around it.
"Move it!" Fuchs's voice snarled in my earphones. "Stop your dawdling!"
What difference did it make, I thought, as I ducked through the airlock hatch. My eyes widened with surprise when I saw that the inner hatch of the airlock was wide open. I hesitated a fraction of a second, only to be shoved unceremoniously by the crewman behind me through the inner hatch and into the compartment beyond it.
"I'm sealing the lock in 10 seconds, Fuchs snapped. "Whoever's still outside will stay outside, understand me?"
As I stumbled into the compartment beyond the airlock chamber, I half-turned and saw, beyond the crewman's shoulder, Marguerite's spacesuited figure. The crewman's suits were different from our own. Their fabric was a dirty grayish-silver. The suits looked bulkier, stiffer, and their helmets were the old-fashioned kind, mostly opaque, with a faceplate visor instead of the fishbowl bubbles that we wore. The crewman behind Marguerite turned and pulled the airlock hatch shut.
"Stand by for emergency dive," Fuchs commanded. "Prepare to fill forward buoyancy tanks."
Then he lapsed into a guttural foreign tongue. It sounded oriental to me, not Japanese, but something like it. He was talking to someone on his bridge, obviously, or perhaps to a voice-activated computer, not to us. One of the crewmen dogged the airlock's inner hatch shut while the other clomped in his heavy boots to what looked like a pump. I heard it start chugging, but then its noise faded, and my spacesuit stiffened and ballooned noticeably. Finally, I understood. They had used this compartment as an adjunct to their airlock, so we could all get into the ship quickly rather than squeezing through the regular airlock chamber one at a time. Clever. But as we waited for the compartment to fill with normal breathable air, I realized that there were only 2 crewmen with us. I had seen 3 when we were descending toward Lucifer. Did they deliberately leave the other one outside? Even if Fuchs was ruthless enough to give such a command, what kind of men were these to obey it? The pump's chugging grew louder again, which meant the compartment was filling to normal air pressure. At last the crewman near it checked a readout on the wrist of his suit, then bent awkwardly and shut off the pump. He and his partner raised the visors of their helmets. They were both Asians, I saw. I unsealed my helmet and lifted it off my head. Marguerite just stood there unmoving, so I went to her and took off her helmet. Her eyes were dry now, but they were staring, unfocused, seeing into the past, sorrowful beyond telling. I almost told her not to regret her mother's death because we would be dead ourselves soon enough. But I didn't have the guts. Actually, I didn't even have the strength to open my mouth.
"Get your suits off," Fuchs's voice commanded. "And toss them out the airlock. Get rid of him, quick."
I blinked with surprise. Apparently, Fuchs was not resigned to dying. With the crewmen helping, Marguerite and I slipped out of the backpacks and peeled off our spacesuits. The crewmen were silent, blank-faced, and quite efficient. They got rid of our suits quickly.
"Follow the crewmen up to the bridge," Fuchs said as soon as our suits went out the airlock.
I realized he must be watching us, although I couldn't see a camera anywhere in the blank-walled compartment. One of the crewmen opened the hatch and gestured us through into a long passageway. We were still inside Lucifer's gas envelope, I knew. Apparently the vessel had no gondola dangling below. The living and working quarters were built inside the envelope. The vessel was at least double the size of Hesperus. That was easy to see. Marguerite and I, escorted by the 2 silent, impassive crewmen, walked down the long passageway to a ladder. Peering up and down its well, I saw that it went 2 decks down and 2 more up. We climbed up. One of the crewmen went before me, the other stayed behind Marguerite. I got the unpleasant feeling that they were behaving like guards escorting a pair of prisoners. The bridge was spacious, with 4 crew stations and a commodious command chair, which was empty when we arrived there. All 4 of the personnel present were Asians, 3 of them women. No one said a word.
"Can any of you speak English?" I asked. "When they have to," came Fuchs's voice from behind me.
I turned. He was standing in an open hatch off to one side of the bridge, framed by its metal edges. Lars Fuchs had a thick, wide physique, a barrel chest, short, heavy arms and legs, but those arms looked as strong as a gorilla's. He seemed powerful, ferocious, like a black bear or some other wild animal with strong, sharp claws and a short temper. His face was set in an unpleasant sardonic scowl, almost a sneer.
"So you are Martin Humphreys's son, are you?"
I nodded as he stepped closer to me. Surprisingly, he was slightly shorter than me, only a hair.